Mary, thank you so much. To all of you that are here, on behalf of the Interior Department, the National Park Service, the wonderful citizens of San Francisco, you honor us with your presence. To have the diplomats of the world who have graciously given your time so that you can come and share in the American experience with us is humbling. And we truly appreciate this, and we thank you. I know, too, if you just raise your hand, but we have representatives of the mayor's office, and they've done so much to help us with this, so we want to thank you for that as well. I went with a number of my friends this morning to the Muir Woods, and I continued a tradition that I've had ever since I was a little boy, and that is I always try to buy a souvenir. So I thought I'd show you what I got. This I thought was particularly appropriate. I love boxes, and I found this box. And I thought, isn't it ironic? It's in the shape of the arrowhead, the symbol of the National Park Service. Now, it's under $25, and I don't have an expense account. I mean, this is all personal. But I thought, I believe June 30th is Mary Bomar's birthday. What could be better than for her to have this box? Now, and I mentioned to the wonderful reporter from the Chronicle, here's another box I found. This reminds me of my childhood because I had one just like this. And it has this beautiful picture of Muir Woods, which, again, I had a poster of this. And then when you open this, that wonderful redwood smell. Now, again, there's somebody I'd like to present this to. And it's somebody who knows what it is to give. Nancy Brinker brought you all here. This was her idea to bring us together. She's been wonderful in acknowledging the work of so many other people. But what this lady does, she's a woman of vision and accomplishment. The Susan Coleman Race for the Cure, which is now known around the world. 3 weeks ago, my staff and I ran 3 miles, joined 50,000 other runners in Washington, D.C., on behalf of the memory and the joy of life in Susan. That was Nancy's sister. And communities all over America do this. You can't buy a product that doesn't have the pink ribbon. And in fact, when we flew out here in United Airlines, my staff and I needed to stretch. We went back to the galley section of the 767, and they're popping off the tabs on these Cokes that everybody else was drunk because it's a fundraiser, and so we were put to work. But Nancy, this is for you. Okay, another one. There's not a greater champion, believer in the national parks than our president and our first lady. And as has been identified, the first lady is with her girlhood friends, and they're in Acadia. But she sent one of her champions, somebody that is such a joy for Mary and me to work with, that when we need to have things happen, and we need to have the First Lady aware of that, Anita is wonderful. You heard how articulate she is. She's a believer, and she's now an owner of this wonderful box. Now, if I had enough, you'd all get one of these boxes. But I also, I have to show you this. I'm way too young, but I now have a grandchild. And his name is Brody, and so I got him this, which says, I love trees, I love American eagles, I love deer, and I love near woods. So, not bad. I'll give that to him soon. Okay. Passport, international community, you're aware of passports. Here's our passport. This is to all of our national parks, 391, as Brian O'Neill said. We're lucky to have Brian O'Neill. Any Fortune 50 company, any Fortune 50 company would love to have Brian O'Neill because he is an entrepreneur who brings that wonderful spirit of entrepreneurship to the national parks. You combine that wonderful ability with the leadership and the passion of a John Jarvis and all the men and women who wear the gray and green. We're very fortunate. Very, very fortunate. And so, again, I got the stamp today, Muir Woods. For those of you that haven't been to the Muir Woods, you should go. In 1945, there was a very special gathering of diplomats from around the world. They met discussing the end of the war. They met to commemorate the life of Franklin Roosevelt. And there was a large group photo of these diplomats from 1945. And today we had diplomats from around the world, and we gathered together and we had an updated picture. It's a place that is sacred. It's a place where it encourages silence so that you simply allow the serenity and the tranquility of that atmosphere enrich you, inspire you, replenish you, restore you. And it does. Those trees, which date back thousands of years, smallest pine cone in the world, tallest tree in the world. Go figure. But you see, it shows you, if you have the idea, and if you give it root, and if you nurture it, it will go to new heights. And that's what we're doing. That's why we love our parks. When I say Yosemite, Yellowstone, National Park Service, really, if you say that to any American in a poll and say, do you have a positive or negative response, it's 100% positive. Positive. Yosemite National Park, Yellowstone. Yosemite National Park was created in 1864 with the signature of Abraham Lincoln. A man who was dealing with one of the most difficult times in the history of this country, a civil war. And yet, he had thoughts of setting aside land that would be precious. Yellowstone, 1872, signed by Ulysses S. Grant, who had been the general of the Union Army, but as president, he realized the splendor of the outdoors and of the West. And so he signed it. And then they knew that there were times that fire was going to go through there. Well, how do you deal with that? And so he called upon one of his colleagues, General Phil Sheridan. And he said, General, would you please go to that place we both love? And would you help us to determine how we can be stewards? And so General Phil Sheridan, who we know from the Civil War era, was able to use his military skills to go back and to give back to the country. And in fact, the quasi-military establishment, the heritage of the National Park Service, has its beginnings from those discussions. The firefighting techniques, which we use today, all began with Phil Sheridan. Yesterday I spoke with Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. I will join him tomorrow because we're dealing with fire. And yet, some of the very protocol that we are using in fighting these fires here and throughout the nation go back to the beginnings of a Ulysses S. Grant and a Phil Sheridan who loved the outdoors and used their skills to help us steward the land. Quite magnificent. The National Park Service, 1916. During World War I, Woodrow Wilson signed the papers so that we created the National Park Service. You notice, isn't it interesting, that during each of these times that you would say there was peril, there was negative things happening, and yet some of the most positive things took place. Just as small as the little redwood pine cone, humanity thought of something bigger. And so they planted the seeds that became stewardship. When we had the Queen of England who visited and graced the United States last year, she was a guest at the White House. She was a guest at Jamestown as we commemorated the 400th anniversary of the establishment of that colony. And then she went to the World War II Memorial. I've just named three national parks: the White House, Jamestown, World War II Memorial. These are ecosystems. These are places of people. This is our heritage. This is who America is. Go to the New Orleans Jazz Park and hear the uniqueness of jazz. When we gather like this, I think it's an opportunity for us to thank you for being here, but also to thank you for your inspiration from the international community. As Mary pointed out, whether it's Samlot, whether it's projects with Samlot, which, Mr. Ambassador, I know there's currently a program to reach out to Thailand, make it a trilateral opportunity. With Argentina, with South Korea, we have a team from the National Park Service. It's on its way to South Korea to sign an agreement there. The number of things that we have taking place internationally. You say, well, how does this all fit with the Department of the Interior? And I've pointed out that President Ronald Reagan said only in Washington, D.C., would you call the Department of the Outdoors Interior. I think that translates. But we're responsible for 20% of the United States of America. And in that is included the 391 park units. It's all of the wildlife refuges. The Fish and Wildlife Service is within the Department of the Interior. We have trust responsibility for 561, all Native American tribes and Native Alaskans. 1/3 of all domestic oil and gas produced in the United States is the responsibility of the Department of the Interior. We are the administrative authority for all of the U.S. territories. We span 12 time zones. We have the U.S. Geological Survey, which is within the Department of the Interior. Last year when I had the honor of leading the U.S. delegation to South Africa and to meet with 73 countries and talk about global Earth observation and how can we use all of our non-classified information from our satellites and from our tsunami buoys and from our earthquake detectors and monitors and Richter scales. How can we link all of that data together and create an early warning for Earth so that as we see that climate patterns may set up a drought and therefore crop failure, in knowing that, we can go ahead and we can pre-deploy food and avoid massive starvation. It's people working together. It's quite remarkable. And I think that as we gather in settings like this and we celebrate America and our friends by acknowledging and enjoying our national parks, to go there to the Muir Woods today with friends from around the world, you realize it's an ecosystem. It's not just a park. It's not static. As Brian would point out, you raise, what, some 200,000 plants every year? 200,000 plants. And who helps us raise these? The 19,000 volunteers that Brian has right here. Those of you that went to Alcatraz, not necessarily an ecosystem, but in essence, perhaps it is. Because it identifies and discourses our history of humanity. What do we do with humanity? How do we treat people? And so there is a prison that is a place where you can come and you can experience part of what the history of the United States was. And how do we provide the manpower for that to this day? Through volunteers. And interestingly enough, you have to earn the right to be the overnight volunteers at Alcatraz. I believe it's 1,000 hours that you must put in public service to the parks before you can then submit your name to a lottery to determine if you can have the honor of going and being one of the sentinels of Alcatraz. Alexis de Tocqueville talked about the greatness of this new place called America. The greatness because it was built on volunteerism, where people joined together and were not given an edict, you must do this, but instead said, we shall do this. We shall do this together because we have a love and a passion and a greatness to achieve something. The Tetons, which was a gift from the Rockefeller families, but Mary and I had the great pleasure of dedicating the new visitor center, the Craig Thomas Visitor Center. 50% of that was from the federal government. 50% of it was from the foundation or the Friends of the Tetons. And as one of the members of the foundation said, this magnificent facility that we built is so much more magnificent because we did it together. If either of us had done it alone, it would have been diminished. And so we do it together. That's the genius of what President Bush is recommending. That on this centennial challenge that Mary talks about, that during those years leading up to 2016, you don't simply have a birthday on the day of August 25th. You begin to prepare for that years in advance. And that's why we now have this opportunity with the President and with Congress. The idea has now come out of the House Committee on a unanimous, bipartisan voice vote. In Washington, D.C. today, which I believe you can say is somewhat politically charged, where there is partisan politics, this is one piece of legislation that has bipartisan support. I believe it's another opportunity, as we've seen from the history of those others I mentioned, that this may be where America heals, where America continues its love of the parks and the idea of philanthropy and giving and volunteerism. When the legislation was first introduced on the floor of the Senate, a Senate sponsor said, "We believe in what is being proposed. We believe in this concept that you would possibly raise $100 million from the private sector each year leading up to 2016. But in all honesty, we think we'll be lucky if we achieve $20 million. Let's be realistic." So let's be realistic. How much did we have in signed letters of financial commitment the first year? It was not $20 million. It was $301 million. And that's just the beginning. I had a very special occasion this last week. I went to Arlington Cemetery, and all of you from the diplomatic community, you know where Arlington Cemetery is. I'm going to give you just a quick little thought about this. And that is, Arlington House, which sits up on that hill, was built by the adopted son of George Washington. It was a way for him to somehow give tribute back to the greatness of the man, General Washington. It was to be a place of respect and splendor. And then, as fate would have it, when a young lieutenant named Robert E. Lee married into that family and ultimately became the owner of that house, fate gave him a crossroads. And that was, he was asked to lead, to become the number one general of the Union Army, to stop a rebellion that was brewing in the South, to lead all of his friends and comrades of West Point. And you go to that house, and the ranger will point out to you that in that room, he paced for hours, deliberating what should be the decision. And he finally made that decision. He decided to join the rebellion. And so, fate would have it that his home was confiscated. And fate would have it that the first of the soldiers that died, where there was no identity, would be buried in his front yard as an insult. We'll teach him. And yet, from that fate, ultimately Arlington Cemetery has become perhaps the most sacred ground of America. It's where our sons and daughters who wear the uniforms that have defended democracy around the world and at home are buried. And so that vision of the adopted son of George Washington ultimately came true. I simply tell you that story because when I looked at Arlington House and walked through it, it is not up to standard. It needs repair. I'm going to convene a group. I'm going to convene a group from the military, retired officers. It's their kinship. And I'm going to just say, walk with me through this house. Do you believe it meets the standards? And as we stand here and look up at that hill, are you satisfied? Because nothing is substandard in Arlington except that home. Or is it time for us to once again take the hill? Through philanthropy, volunteerism. That's America. That's America. My friend, the ambassador of Tanzania, I was with him about 3 weeks ago in Tanzania, and a friend from Senegal. We're doing things there. America, Tanzania, the continent of Africa. Good things. And it continues today. I conclude with this one little thought and story. In Washington, D.C., there was a young man, 23, who was waiting on my table. I was there with three other colleagues. I said, "Where are you from?" And he said, "I'm from Senegal." I said, "How old are you?" And he said, "I'm 23. And I said, "What'd you do on your birthday?" Because he told me it was just 2 days before. And he said, "I didn't do anything." I said, "Why not?" And he said, "Because all of my family is still in Africa. I have nobody here to celebrate with." I said, "All right. You choose a dessert from the menu. And you bring it to my table and put it on my bill. And we're going to celebrate your birthday." So this young man named Charles brought this cake, and he already had a candle with it lighted and five forks, and brought it to my table, and so the four of us sang happy birthday to Charles. And then You could tell he made a wish, and he blew the candle out. I said, "What was your wish?" And he said, "I can't tell you." I said, "Why not?" And he said, "Because it would not come true." And I said, "We understand that tradition. But," I said, "the wish was not for you, was it?" I could see it in his eyes. And he said, "No." I said, who was it for?" And he said, "It was for my mother." I said, "What's wrong with your mother?" And he said, "She's very, very ill." And I said, "Charles, all I can tell you is you have 4 more prayers surrounding your mother tonight." My point is that as we have opportunities like this, where we celebrate America, we celebrate the national parks, we celebrate our friends who have their parks, and we celebrate our thoughts together. If we light lights together and we share our wishes, I don't think there's any way to diminish the brightness of our future. And so let's build upon what has occurred at this gathering. Friendships have been strengthened because of this. And visions have been clarified because of this. So, God bless America and God bless all of your countries. God bless our children who must be reconnected with nature so that we, the generation of the stewards, do not forget the next generation. They must be connected. So my thought and my prayer is that the children of the world can know the joy of our outdoors and how magnificent they truly are. God bless you all.
Mr. Secretary, for those inspiring and beautiful words, and we congratulate you on your leadership.